Many of you are familiar with George Barna. He does surveys. And the latest Barna survey and update illustrates a problem and a crisis that we're facing in the Western world. You might remember, in case you don't, I thought I'd remind you, that I gave a sermon last week on the origin of evil and violence. I explained that Satan and the spirit world are behind many of the approaches, and the violence and the evil that we see in society today. He is out to try to destroy mankind. And he'll do anything that he possibly can to undermine the human race. One way he is doing this is trying to destroy the next generation of young people, our children who are coming along. He does absolutely everything he can to undermine, to degrade, to pollute, and to undervalue the family. He hates the family. He cannot reproduce himself, and he cannot have a family, and therefore he hates families. But you and I can have families. We can have children. We can have grandchildren. We can have great-grandchildren. We can have aunts and uncles and cousins. And this is something that just, let's say, grates on him constantly. Likewise, God is producing a family. And he hates this exceedingly. As the Bible says in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11, you and I should not be ignorant of his devices, 2 Corinthians 2:11. We shouldn't be ignorant of what he is planning, what he is doing. When you look at society, it's very obvious what Satan the devil is up to. From an article titled The Marketing of Evil, Part 1, Selling Sex and Corruption to Your Kids, by David Kuplan, he writes, just as the military and private schools and Boy Scouts have uniforms, so does the youth culture. Baggy pants, backward hats, chokers and other jewelry, body piercing, tattoos, and the like. But if uniforms symbolize values and allegiance, a loyalty to a higher or lower order, then in this case, it's an allegiance to an increasingly defiant musical, social, sexual, and cultural world. A mysterious, to parents, realm that seems to magically be drawing millions of children in. He calls it the gangsta generation. Or the gangster generation. It's hip-hop in suburbia, the culture of rap. Everywhere, students wear baseball caps turned backwards or pulled down over their eyes, oversized T-shirts, ridiculous baggy jeans or shorts with drop crotches that hang to mid-shins, waists that sag to reveal the top of brightly colored boxers, expensive name brand high tops complete the outfit. Variations on the themes are hooded sweatshirts with the hood worn during school and do-rags, which are bandanas tied on the head, a style copied from the street gangs. And of course, we could go ahead and comment about the girls who you can hardly buy for a teenage girl today any clothing that doesn't reveal the midriff and where the top part's hiked up and the bottom part drops. Well, brethren, I want us to take a look today at the present cultural trends and what influence those trends are having on the younger generation. I realize we live in what people call the Bible Belt. And many think, well, this doesn't affect us. It doesn't have the same effect upon this region as it does on other regions. And I will grant you that there are some areas of the world or this country. New York is a case, maybe Chicago, Miami, L.A., you can name Detroit, a few others, where maybe it's more persuasive, but it does have a profound effect upon everyone in the younger generation, among our children. And we need to realize it. We need to be aware of it. The Barna survey I was referring to start with is titled Virginia Tech's Tragedy is a Wake-Up Call. Says here, I'm going to read again from this study or this survey. Barna states that the current public debate about the implications of the Virginia Tech tragedy is missing the point. The animated conversation about gun control, campus security, counseling standards, campus communications, drug abuse, mental health funding do not address the core issues raised by the event. This situation is not primarily a challenge to politicians, educators, or police. It is a dramatic wake-up call for parents, for the parents in this country. Barna has done studies on parenting and child development and has led him to a series of facts and observations that relate to the Virginia Tech situation. Fact, by the time an American child is 23 years of age, as was the killer in Virginia, he has been or has seen countless murders among the more than 30,000 violent acts to which he's exposed through television, movie, and video games. Now, I realize that there are those out there who will argue that this doesn't have any effect on young people, that you don't see thousands and millions of young people going out and killing people. But there are children who are emotionally and psychologically prone to this type of influence, who have difficulties in these areas, and who are more easily influenced by something like that. And we increasingly see more crimes being committed by children. And last week I quoted that to you out of the book concerning children without a conscience, where I showed that we are beginning to raise a generation of children, some of them 4 and 5, who've murdered others. It's not uncommon to see young people, 7, 8, and 9, who have killed somebody or violently attacked another person. Isaiah 3 is a prophecy that I believe describes our society today. It is specifically a prophecy about Judah, Jerusalem, but also indirectly concerning any nation, any people who give up God's standards, God's values, God's way of life, and do not practice those as the basis of their society. In verse 5, Isaiah 3, the people will be oppressed, everyone by another, and everyone by his neighbor. And we find this is happening today in society where people claim rights. One person can believe his rights have been violated and the rights of millions of people then are forgotten so that that one person, quote unquote, rights are protected. And then we find the child will be insolent toward the elder and the base towards the honorable. And verse 12, as for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, those who lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. So God says children are oppressors, children are insolent, and the base act in a wrong manner towards those who are honorable. Another fact, by age 23, the average American will have viewed thousands of hours of pornographic images, which diminish the dignity and the value of human life. You can see a pornographic image, and it will stay in your mind for years. You can see something you wish you could remember, can't remember it the next day. It's amazing. Those who watch this kind of stuff want to imitate it. Look at what happens on a lot of the school breaks from, you know, the college students. Some high school students are on. Many of you may have seen here recently on television a presentation called Girls Gone Wild, where it showed on the beaches of Florida and many other places how girls are dancing, how they go naked, how boys and girls are drinking, and some of the activities that they get involved in. What kind of damage does pornography do to marriage? You just ask someone who has a mate who's into that, and you will find the damage. It has a lasting damage to a marriage. Mark 7, Jesus Christ revealed where many of these type of things come from. What we need to realize is that we have a responsibility as parents in protecting our children to as great an extent as we can. You remember the disciples got into an argument with the Pharisees about should you wash your hands up to your elbows when you eat? And they were talking about being defiled. And he said in verse 18, are you thus without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatever enters into a man from the outside cannot defile him? Because it does not enter into his heart, but into his stomach, and is eliminated, thus purifying all foods. And he said, what comes out of the man, that defiles a man. So what comes out of us, out of our hearts, defiles us. For from within, verse 21, out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornication, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile a man. And Satan has this society so organized that its influence is to influence man on his baser levels and to influence young people into this way of life. Yet Philippians 4:8 says that we are to think on things that are pure, that are wholesome, that are lovely. Another fact, after nearly a quarter of a century, the typical American will have listened to hundreds of hours of music. I'll say thousands of hours of music that foster anger, hatred, disrespect for authority, selfishness, and radical independence. The younger generation is hooked on music. Remember years ago we used to have Hooked on Phonics? Well, now it's hooked on rap. It's hooked on gangsta music. Many cannot go anywhere without their music, their iPods, their phones, you know, anything that they can play music on. Many times a young person will sit in his bedroom for hours and listen to music, do his homework, you know, peruse the internet. And doing all of these things at once, and it's drummed into their head hour after hour, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. He goes on with another fact. The typical worldview of a person in their early 20s promotes self-centeredness and the right to happiness and fulfillment. It was interesting this past week in watching the news that one of the articles or one of the commentaries came out was about the younger generation and how that many in the younger generation, when they go to work, start crying the first time they're corrected. That they go to work and for one of the first times in their lives, they find out that their boss doesn't like what they're doing. And so he corrects them, chews them out maybe. And they can't handle that. Up to this time, they've never been told anything, but you're the greatest. You know, you can be the president if you want to. You know, you are always trying to build the self-esteem of this child up. And then somebody comes along and tells him he's not. He doesn't have any idea how to take it. See, there's a whole younger generation, many within that generation, that are growing up and they've not been taught when they're wrong. They've not been corrected when they're wrong. They've not been taught the right way. They've not been shown this is wrong, this is right. And so you find so often that parents help to facilitate their children in this direction, thinking that they're doing them good. What is the driving force so many parents have today in rearing their children? What is it they want? They want their children to be happy. Well, they can't always be happy. There are times when they're corrected, they're not going to be happy. There are times when they can't have what they want and they won't be happy. There are times when they have to realize they have to be responsible for their own action. Going on, it says the importance of personal expression in all forms. Again, talking about the worldview. The necessity of tolerating aberrant or immoral points of view. All of this comes under the worldview of many young people. It allows for a disrespect of other people, the use of profanity, and advances forms of generic spirituality that dismisses the validity of Judeo-Christian faith. Largely propelled by postmodern thought, the typical worldview of the young person does not facilitate respect for life, acceptance of the rule of law, or the necessity of hard work, personal sacrifice, and paying the dues or contributing to the common good. Barna noted that only about 2% of today's teens possess a biblical worldview that acknowledges the existence of God, the existence of Satan, of sin, the availability of forgiveness and grace. So therefore, the vast majority are not being reared on moral, biblical principles. The average adolescent spends more than 40 hours each week digesting media. And the typical teenager in America absorbs almost 60 hours of media content every week. So this is all unfiltered, unchaperoned, and comes in. Now, when it talks about media, they're not talking about watching Fox News. They're not talking about studying world news, international trends, the stock market, any of those things. We're talking about music, movies, video games, all of these type of things. Other trends. It also appears that one out of every five young person is or has been under the influence of mood-altering medication. And the long-term effect of these, no one really knows. The stress level has been steadily rising among young children over the past couple of decades. How many young people today take Ritalin? How many are on drugs? How many are called, quote, unquote, hyperactive? And therefore are placed on drugs? Well, it's just a very common thing. A variety of factors have contributed to such stress, such as parental acrimony, divorce, household financial troubles, media-fed expectations regarding materialism, overscheduling of children, bullying, physical abuse within the home, excess peer pressure. Another interesting fact I thought is one-third of the nation's teenagers reported having been in a physical fight in the last year. Nearly one out of five 9th through 12th grader students has carried a gun, a knife, or a club this past month. So that means one out of five, basically your high school students, is carrying a knife or a gun around or some type of club. Now, in many cases, they can say, well, this is to protect myself. But what happens if somebody loses his cool or is attacked? And, you know, again, you have violence taking place. Education, both in the home and outside of it, provides diminishing emphasis upon development of character. The standard today, the increased emphasis meeting academic performance standards. Parents think as long as their kids meet the academic standards, they take a test, they pass that test, that's it. You know, they're doing well. And the fact of character or character development is not stressed. And again, he emphasizes the fact that in our society today, you do not have the traditional safety net comprising of a loving, supporting family. What has happened in our country is divorce is rampant. For every marriage today, there's now a divorce. People do not have extended families living close. It used to be you have your grandparents close. You have aunts and uncles around to help you take care of your children. Today, people move all over the place. And, I mean, I'm a classic example of that. We don't have children here with us, but we've moved all over the country. We've asked our children from time to time about whether they like to live near their parents, and they said, well, where? You know, where are you going to be living? Because we've moved about every 4 years, 8 months, and you know, just you don't stay in the same place. So they're not going to get up and keep moving just because their parents do. But it's very typical that people move about every 5 years, and it's just a situation in this country. Most young people admit that they do not feel as if they receive sufficient attention from their parents, that their parents are involved in other things. So who do they look to for help? Who do they look to as their role models? Well, they turn to their peers, and their peers are the ones who influence them. Peers are more important to the majority of young people today than their parents are. They're around them 8 to 10 hours at school or after school. Their opinion counts. Their opinion about what you wear, how you look, kind of shoes you have on, type of clothes you have, you know, how you do in school or what you listen to, the toys you have, the whistles you have. But Barna goes on to say that parents have a tremendous influence upon their children if they'll only utilize that influence. Their parenting style and practices can have a huge influence on the behavior and the perspective of their children. But he goes on to show that today parents are struggling. Parents are struggling. Raising healthy and confident children in today's world is not an easy task. Citing recent studies his firm has completed with parents, Barna highlighted some struggles that American parents are currently facing. Now you ask yourself, are we facing any of these same problems? Number one is the majority of parents feel overly busy and stressed out and are buckling under the pressure of mounting financial debt. Okay, so what we find, parents are overly busy today. And yes, I think everybody is overly busy today. In many cases, both parents work outside of the home. So many families today, you find, are single-parent homes where the mom is, or the husband, is rearing the children by himself, and they're having to work outside of the home, and the children are put in daycare or are deposited in somebody else's care. Materialism motivates so many people today. And what you find, people feel they've got to have all of the gadgets. They've got to have everything. And so therefore, they've got to go out and buy it. And even in many cases where one person working could take care of the family, to work so that they can keep up with everything that they want. And the children are not receiving the attention of the parents. Credit card debt motivates so many people. How many people are living beyond their means? Today you find credit card debts mounting up into the trillions of dollars, and that the average person is 3, 4, 5, 6, can be up to $50,000 in debt. They just keep getting more credit cards, switching credit cards to another credit card and going deeper in debt. They also found out that most adults are dissatisfied with their jobs, and so they're unhappy with that. American parents, Barna said, tend to blame other parents for their problems. So they're having problems with their children. Who's to blame? Not me. Other parents are to blame. As evident among today's young people, while excusing themselves from any blame. It just seems today that people will not accept responsibility for their own actions. Notice, this was from an earlier Barna survey. Ultimately, children get neglected because parents rely upon everyone else to do the job for them. Barna stated, the popular notion that it takes a village to raise a child has become an accepted excuse for millions of parents to assign away the commitment for the child's development. Families may not be able to provide everything that a child needs to be successful and be able to launch into today's world, but they can do a lot more than they are seeking to provide today. Rather than play victim and blame social institutions for inadequate performance of duties, millions of families would be well advised to rearrange their priorities and reclaim their commitment to preparing their children for life. What does God want us to do with our children? I read this last week, but let's go back and read it again. Malachi chapter 2. Malachi chapter 2, we find why God gave us marriage. And here he's talking about the marriage covenant and not disparaging the marriage covenant. Verse 14 says, yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness. This is Malachi 2:14. Between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously, yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant. But did not he make them one? Didn't God make us one when you get married? Having a remnant of the Spirit. And why one? Why does God make a couple one? He seeks godly offspring. Therefore, take heed to your spirit. So what God seeks is a godly generation, young people who are reared on right values, on God's way of life, who are taught the right things to do. When you have children, you have the responsibility, all of us do, of preparing that child as the next generation. That's what one generation does. It prepares the next generation to take over. And what you always hope is that the next generation will be better than the previous generation. In every way, you know, spiritually, physically, health-wise, mentally, and, you know, and just in every way that you can think of. But today we find we have the me generation. A couple years ago, there was a sermon given at the feast about, it's not about you, or it's not about me. Acts 20:35 says it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. And so it's not just about us, it's about serving and giving and helping others. Notice what Barna goes on to say. Concerning the time of election, political election, the election has led millions of people to identify what they feel are major issues facing the nation and how each of the major candidates plans to address those issues. In that light, it's intriguing that comparatively few adults have identified the plight of children as one of the key issues requiring greater attention. The major concern listed by voters is what? Well, it pertains to their own needs and dreams. See, what can I get? If you're elected as my politician, whether it's a senator or representative or president, what's in it for me? Are you going to give me free health care? Are you going to provide me with whatever? And so the party that comes along and says, okay, we're going to take care of you in all of these ways, you know, they think, you know, that this fulfills what they want. But he says, what does this say about our society when we admit that our children are being set up for failures? And then when we are not even able to list it as one of the major concerns that needs to be looked at. Fewer than one out of every 10 families have parents who pray together, study the Bible together, and lead the family in regular exploration of their faith. Fewer than one out of 10. Then the standard that parents have established for evaluating their own performance as parents are innocuous. How do you know if you're doing a good job or not as a parent? How do you evaluate that? What standards do you use? He says, if their children have avoided publicly recognized problems, such as physical or substance abuse, gang involvement, satanic activity, pregnancy, or physical aggression, and continue to get passing grades in school, they stay relatively healthy, parents believe they're doing an acceptable job. We're okay. And, you know, that's basically the standards that they go by. Another fact is that few parents are aware of the dramatic effect the media has upon people's behaviors and values. Just 9% of the parents believe the media has an influential effect upon their children. And only one out of three children, or parents of children under 13, impose any significant restrictions on their children. So you might ask then, what should parents do? What can we do? Well, it's interesting that Barna gave several suggestions, which I thought were excellent. I'd like to just mention these here. He explained that his studies of parents over the past several years have highlighted the importance of parental guidance and involvement in shaping a child's value and behavior. He noted that the moral and spiritual development of people is largely determined by the time someone reaches age 13. And that fundamental changes are minimal after this point. So what has the Catholic Church said in the past? Give me a child till he's age 7, you know, he'd be a Catholic for life. They realize the importance of training and teaching a child at young age. So in the recent study, there have been several parental practices. In other words, what Barna did was to interview hundreds of parents who were quite successful in rearing their children. What did they do? How did they rear their children? And then he summarized those. He says, one habit, Barna noted, was that parents believed that raising children was the most important job they were doing. Let me ask you, what other job can you think of that's more important? Working? Taking care of your pets? Having another car? Buying a home in the country? You know, I mean, you think of what you find the American dream and American values so often that are talked about. It's getting ahead, making the big buck, being able to, you know, have a lot of money. But is there anything more important than doing the job of taking care of raising our children? So it's even more important than their occupation that pays their bills. They relied upon schools, their church, and other entities to support them in this endeavor. But they accepted the primary responsibility for the task of the outcome. Now, do we have any biblical basis for what he has discerned here? I think so. Let's just take the example of God. God is a parent. He is a father. You and I are called his children. Jesus Christ is our elder brother. What is the most important job that he is doing? Summarized in Hebrews 2:10. It is a part of the mission statement of the United Church of God. Hebrews 2, verse 10. Notice. For it is fitting for him, and this it would be good to go back and read this whole chapter because it all deals with this. For whom are all things, and by whom are all things, and bringing many sons to glory. God's job is to bring many sons, and we could say daughters, to glory, and to make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. And then you go on to find that he's not ashamed to call us brothers. And several verses are quoted here to show that Jesus Christ looks upon us as family members. All through the Bible, God is referred, or the New Testament, God is referred to as our Father. So God's whole plan is to bring sons to glory, to save us, to give us eternal life, that we might live in his family. How do we know that this is important to God? Well, he sent his son to die for us. That's why. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. He resurrected Jesus Christ to make it possible for him to live in us. Jesus Christ was willing to come to this earth to die for us, to divest himself of his glory. In Hebrews 13:5, God says that he will never leave us nor forsake us. That he'll never turn his back on us, that he will be with us. Philippians 1:6 says that God will perform a work in us. You know, he's not going to quit. He will continue to work with us. God has made access to him central to our relationship. And that's through prayer. And when Christ died, it made it possible for us to directly go before the throne of grace. He talks to us all the time, just like a parent should, through his word, through the Bible, to tell us how to live, what he wants us to do, everything that he would like to see us accomplish. And so you find that this is the most important thing. I mean, why are we even here? Why did God create the earth? Why did he create the physical universe? Why did he create us? Well, he had a plan. In that plan, Christ was crucified before the foundation of the world. You find that God called us at that time. God has a plan and he's been working it out. and he will work it out. And the vast majority will be in God's kingdom. So the first thing we have to realize is, as a parent, that our children must be the most important job that we have. Secondarily, a second common outlook, he said, was approaching the job of parenting with a plan. Got a plan. These were parents who thought through what they were trying to accomplish and how they intended to pursue those outcomes. While they were constantly revising that plan and tinkering with different strategies, they were very strategic and intentional in their efforts. They left as little to chance as possible and tried to stay a step ahead of their children's need and the challenges thrown at them by society. So they had a plan. When you have children, you begin to think, okay, what would I like my child, how would I like my child to grow up? Do I want him to be a hard worker? Do I want him to have love? Do I want him to be well educated? What would I like for my child? And you begin to work toward that. You begin to say, well, if he's going to be this way, what do I need to begin to teach him when he's 2 or 3 or 5 or 10? And you begin training him. And you try as much as you can. I mean, nobody has a guarantee that if you train them that they will automatically come into the church. We know that. But I guarantee you, you increase their chances of doing so by laying the right foundation before them and training them and teaching them in the right way. Notice Ephesians 1, again talking about God as a parent. Ephesians chapter 1 and in verse 4, we find that God has had a plan from the very beginning. Ephesians 1, 4, just as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him in love, having predestinated us to the adoption as sons by Jesus Christ, and him, by Jesus Christ to himself, according to the good pleasure of his will. Now verse 9, and having made known to us the mystery of his will, according to his good pleasure, which he purposed in himself, that in the dispensation of the fullness of time, he might gather together in one all things in Christ. And so you find here that God has had a purpose, as verse 11 says. And that purpose, God has a plan. And we realize what that plan is through the holy days. How God's working out that plan, that he's not trying to convert everybody today. But that God will give everyone eventually an opportunity for salvation. And so you find that God has a plan. And just like it says here, parents are constantly tweaking things. Hebrews chapter 12 tells us that God corrects us. There are times when maybe we don't cooperate fully or we're not growing the way we should. And God, we go astray and God begins to bring us back. Course corrections. And he begins to teach us and train us. He knows exactly what we need. Now, another point that Barna brings out, a third point, says he pointed out that a crucial factor that all of these parents employed was consistency. You must be consistent in your approach. The grown children, as well as the parents themselves, agreed that perhaps the single most important element in their success was remaining consistent in the principles and overall standards and values which they implemented. These parents set their expectations high and did not relax those expectations. Now let me ask you, does God change his standard with the whims of society, with what man wants? God is utterly consistent. It was the Ten Commandments from the very beginning in Exodus 12, in Jesus Christ's day during the time of the New Testament church. Today, the millennium, the white throne judgment, and will be forever. You find that God's standards, values, do not change. And so, too often you find that parents one day will spank a child for something, or correct the child. Very few spank today, but let's say correct the child for something. Next day, the child gets away with it. So now it becomes confusing. Maybe I can, maybe I can't. And so if they can, they'll keep pushing. They know that every time they do this, you know, it's just bang, bang, bang. You know, it's the same thing that, you know, this is just what we do in our family. How many times have you had your children come to you? They already know what you're going to say. But they'll say, well, Joe's parents said he could do it. I don't know how many times our boys tried to pull that on us. And it didn't matter whether Joe, Tom, Dick, Harry, Susie, and everybody else, we would say, we don't do that. That's not what we do. And don't bring it up again. Because, I mean, they have to learn that you are consistent. Says, these parents set their expectations high, and they did not relax those expectations. Children rarely exceeded their parents' expectations. So the level at which those standards are set determines the height to which a child will rise. So what we find, brethren, is that consistency is absolutely important in child rearing. In teaching our children and guiding them. Another thing he found was the issue of media management, which was evident in families. An overwhelming majority of those successful parents believe that the media had a significant influence on the lives of their children. Consequently, they limited, monitored, mediated the media content to which their children were exposed. Now, how often are children in a home exposed to good music? And that's not always just classical. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of good music running across many genres of music. But you have to know that. It's not just the music, it's the words, the music and the words many times. They often refuse to give permission to the kids to watch particular programs or to listen to certain music, and regularly had discussions with their children about the content of the media they consume. Those discussions were not always comfortable or pleasant, but were deemed to be very important in making standards real for their children. So they set the standards. And then finally, says the spiritual side of life is another of the central factors addressed by successful parents. The spiritual side. These were parents who took the development of their children's worldview seriously. How are our children going to view the world? What happens in the world? Are they going to view it strictly from a humanistic point of view? What goes on, or do they view it from a biblical point of view? Do they have exposure to the Bible, to prophecy, to what's going on and what's happening in society? Do they realize that there should be a worldview based upon the Bible and eternal values? It says they invest in enormous amounts of time and energy laying a spiritual foundation that has proven to serve the children well throughout their lives. Earlier, the better in doing this. Besides teaching spiritual beliefs and moral principles, these parents shared religious experience with their children, prayed for them daily. The view of such parents is that children are a gift from God, and they therefore had an intense responsibility to raise a child that pleased God. Now, we're familiar with these scriptures, but in Proverbs chapter 22, Proverbs 22, verse 6, notice, Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. There are values, there are moral standards that you would like to inculcate into that child. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning in verse 1, we find here what God told ancient Israel, and these principles still apply today. Deuteronomy 6:1 says, now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God, to keep all of his statutes and his commandments which I command you, you and your sons and your grandsons, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. God says by keeping his commandments, his statutes, your days, our days would be prolonged. Therefore hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you. See, God wants things to be well with us, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord your God, your Father, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all of your might. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. So where does it start? It starts in us, that it's written, engrafted into our minds, our heart, our way of life, our thinking. And then you shall teach them diligently, verse 7, to your children. It will be natural. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hands, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. Basically implying that we're to build our household on these principles, and we are to live by them. So, brethren, what we find is that as parents, our major job is helping to shape the next generation, the coming generation, the first generation, perhaps, in the world tomorrow. God desires godly seed to be produced. We, today, are in a battle for our children. We're in a warfare. The forces of evil are out there to destroy the family, to undermine all of the true values, and to let everything go. You and I have to stand in the gap and realize that we must all live this way of life. As I explained last week, we may have children, they may no longer be living with us. We do have several families with children here. But many of us have our children, they're grown. Or we may not even have had children. But we still have a responsibility to the younger generation that they can see in us, Jesus Christ. They can see the Bible. They can see this way of life lived by us. And that we don't just talk the talk. We walk the walk and we live this way of life. And so therefore, they can see that this way is the way to live. So we have to realize that we need to stand in the gap and live this way of life. That's our example. And if we do today, then eventually we will all have the opportunity to teach all mankind God's way of life and these principles concerning child rearing.